John 1. We're going through the apostles, the 12 apostles. We're not going to get into Matthias and Paul in this study. We're kind of covering Paul on Sunday mornings anyway. So thus far, we've dealt with just one, but there's an awful lot about him. We talked about Peter. Peter, of course, is the most vocal man in the Gospels other than Christ. If we could have a letters of Christ in red and a letters of Peter in blue, there's a lot of Peter's statements here. Peter is called in Matthew 10:2, he's called the first, the protos, meaning chief, or the first in rank. So it's not just that he talked the most and everybody wished he'd hush. He was, in fact, kind of the leader of the pack. He was the mouthpiece. Now, we know that got him in trouble a good bit of time, but it's interesting that Peter's, many of his assets, as is the case with us as well, many of his greatest assets could also kind of flip and be his greatest liabilities. He was very vocal, and sometimes that was great, and sometimes that came back to bite him a bit. We certainly did not exhaust the study of Peter. We could spend much time on Peter, but he's going to surface a whole lot of times. We spent 2 weeks on Peter. There may be a couple of the other disciples who will spend more time on, and there will certainly be some who will spend less time on. Bartholomew and Nathanael, we don't know a whole lot about them, but we'll deal with Peter and James and John and Andrew this evening. Because Andrew is Simon Peter's brother. Now your turn to John chapter 1. And John is the non-synoptic Gospels. We have four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the synoptic Gospels. And that the reason they're called synoptic Gospels is because they all kind of run together. They're written from different perspectives. And as you read through Matthew, you'll note that he phrases things differently than Luke does. And Luke phrases things differently than Mark does. But essentially, when you're reading all of those, if you want to get a comprehensive view of an event, you can read those three Gospels and you'll really get a good perspective. And then you have John, and John's kind of the outlier. And John has things in it that the other Gospels don't. John has different insight. Now, obviously, he also covers the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. But a different point of view, a different perspective. John's gospel starts at creation. Matthew starts with Joseph. Luke's gospel starts with Mary. And John's gospel starts with, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, the Word was God. So he's writing a different kind of a message with a different kind of a focus. In John's gospel, he starts in the beginning and then he immediately transitions. He doesn't deal with the birth of Christ or the childhood of Christ at all. He goes from in the beginning was the Word to the ministry of John the Baptist. And if you look over John 1, you'll see it. John's message, John the Baptist's message, was repent, for the kingdom of God is at hand. Make straight the way of the Lord, the coming King. So John was the forerunner, you remember, for Christ. He was the prophet who was to come before and say, hey, listen up, the Messiah is coming. The Messiah is coming. John's whole existence was to point people to Jesus Christ. That's why he was there. That's what he was doing in the wilderness. And he was preaching and he was baptizing many when, if you look at verse 29, very well-known verse, the next day John seeth Jesus coming unto him and saith, behold, the Lamb of God which taketh away the sins of the world. So you remember what we're saying. John's message was, Christ is coming. Christ is coming. We come here to John 1:29, and what is his message?
Here he is.
There is Christ. Right there's the one. That's the guy we're talking about. Verse 35 says, again the next day after John stood, and two of his disciples, and looking upon Jesus as he walked, he saith, behold, the Lamb of God. And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. Then Jesus turned and saw them following, and saith unto them, what seek ye? And they said unto him, Rabbi, which is to say, being interpreted, Master, where dwellest thou? He saith unto them, come and see. They came and saw where he dwelt and abode with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two which heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. Here's our first introduction to Andrew. This means of identification. When you are identified, Barry, if you are identified as Sid's brother, or Sid, if you're identified as Barry's brother, depends on what context you're in, right? If Sid walks into the city hall up here, he may be introduced as Barry's brother because Barry worked at City Hall for so long. So it depends on where you're best known. Well, Peter was the better known of these two brothers, not just in Galilee, apparently. Apparently, Peter, he cut a pretty wide swath wherever he went. And so here, even in Judea, he's identified, Andrew is identified as Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. Andrew, while making the top grouping of the 12, remember, there are three groups of four of the disciples, and we go from the best known to the least known, and so we're dealing with the second in the top grouping. He was always to live in the shadow of his better known and much louder brother. Could you imagine being in a room where you have Peter and being his brother? I know when I was coming up, I have an older brother, Wes. He's 4 years older than I am. And when we were in school, I had some teachers, for better or worse, and usually it was worse. They would come and they'd say, "I can't believe you're Wes's brother." And I knew what they meant. They knew what they meant. And they were right. Sometimes I didn't act like my brother. We're very, very different in our personalities. But to live in the shadow of your brother, that's Andrew's lot in life. He's going to always kind of be in the shadows a bit. But he has a hunger for truth. And we see that here in John 1. Along with his brother, Peter, and the sons of Zebedee, James and John, Andrew was a commercial fisherman on the Sea of Galilee. So that's what he did for a living. That's how he made his money. But when we're introduced to Andrew, he's not in Galilee at all. He's down along the Jordan and he's listening to John the Baptist. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that you could not catch a fish in the Jordan River. I don't know that you'd want to eat one that came out of the Jordan River. Jordan River is nasty. But you could probably catch a fish, but you don't commercially fish the Jordan. It's not big enough to do so. And it's not, certainly wouldn't be the best of the catching. Andrew is not at the Jordan to fish. That's not his reason for being here. His reason for being down where he was, away from the Sea of Galilee, is because he was down there so that he could listen to John the Baptist. So he has a hunger for truth that he was willing to turn away from his means of employment, his means of gainful employment, and he goes down to the Jordan, and he's one of John the Baptist's disciples. So he's there, and he's listening to John, and he's looking, because John keeps saying, "The Messiah is coming, the Messiah is coming." And then, eventually, he says, "There's the Messiah." And right away, Andrew and this other unnamed disciple, they leave John the Baptist, and they go to Jesus. Do you think that hurt John the Baptist's feelings? No. Why? Well, John the Baptist is the one who said in John 3:30, "He must increase and I must decrease." That's a good sign. Now, we're not studying John the Baptist tonight, but that's a tremendous aspect of this man. When John the Baptist pointed Jesus out as the promised one, Andrew and this other disciple didn't waste any time in making contact with Jesus. Andrew is the first of the apostles that we have listed making contact with Jesus. And he didn't waste any time in spreading the news. Now, we know here that he comes up to Jesus and he says, they start following Jesus. We know that Jesus didn't have an established home in Judea. So when Jesus took them to where he was staying, it was probably someone else's home or maybe a room in an inn. Verse 39 tells us that this was the 10th hour, so it's 4 p.m. So it made sense for these men to come with Jesus, and then it would get dark fairly quickly after when they would arrive. And so they spend that evening and that night with Jesus, and we don't have the conversation recorded for us. I wish we did. But Jesus confirmed the message of John the Baptist to these two men. Essentially, to boil the conversation down, Jesus says to Andrew and this other, again, unnamed disciple, I am the Messiah. I'm the one who you've been waiting for. Andrew's sacrifice of being away from his fishing business in Galilee had paid off. He'd not just found the truth. He'd found the way, the truth, and the life. He'd found truth personified. Which brings us to our next point about Andrew, which is his passion. His passion wasn't fishing. Now, he probably was a pretty decent fisherman, and having been on the Sea of Galilee, I can understand why you'd want to spend a lot of time there. It's a beautiful place. His passion was to bring people to Jesus. And we know, because we've gone through the Gospels, and you have perhaps many times in your life, you know that the apostles argued among themselves an awful lot. What was their main source of argument? What was their main topic? Who's going to be the greatest, right? They're always going back and forth about this. We also know that Peter is the chief and often the mouthpiece of the 12. So if you had to, from an outsider's perspective, if you had to look at the 12 and you said, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom, you would probably point at Peter because he's the noisiest one. Okay. Now, we don't know who the chiefest, who the most spiritual of the disciples was, but Andrew's leadership was not shown by his being noisy, like Peter's. Most of the time, when we have him mentioned in the Gospels, he's doing the same exact thing, and he is almost always commended. Where sometimes when you read about Peter, he's being reprimanded. Jesus is having to correct him. Whenever you read a singular address of Andrew, when you see his name mentioned and him doing something, it's a positive thing. And you can read through the Gospels. Kind of an interesting thing. You have Peter, noisy and wrong quite a bit. Andrew, quiet and right most of the time. Kind of an interesting comparison of these two brothers. But Andrew's there with Jesus down in Judea. And he returns home to the fishing business with Peter on the Sea of Galilee. We read about it here in verse 41. Look at it. It says, He first findeth his own brother Simon, and saith unto him, we have found the Messiah, which is, being interpreted, the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus, and when Jesus beheld him, he said, thou art Simon, the son of Jonah. Thou shalt be called Cephas, which is, by interpretation, a stone. So, Andrew spends time with Jesus this one evening and night. He spends time with Jesus. He's convinced, beyond the shadow of a doubt, this is the Messiah. And his first inclination is, I'm going to go tell somebody. I'm going to go tell Simon. I'm going to go tell Peter. So he goes up and he tells Peter, and he brings Peter to Jesus. Do you see that? He talks Peter into going from Galilee down to the Jordan, leaving their fishing business. Again, that's significant. That speaks to the persuasiveness of Andrew. Andrew's excitement was enough to cause Peter to be willing to make that journey. Again, that journey that would have been made by foot or on an animal. And then they left again. So Peter and Andrew, they go. Andrew's there with Jesus. He goes and tells Peter, brings Peter to Jesus. And then the two of them return back to Galilee. And they're there for some weeks, or perhaps even months, when Jesus came and met Peter and Andrew beside the sea. And we've already talked about this when Jesus said to them in Matthew 4:18, he said to them, to follow me and I will make you fishers of men. That was after they had already met. They knew Jesus. They had met down by Jordan. Then they'd gone back to fishing, and Jesus, as he was going around Galilee, said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And according to Matthew 4:20, and they straightway left their nets and followed him. But how did Peter get to know Jesus to begin with? Andrew. Andrew took his brother to meet Jesus. Before he was an apostle, he was bringing people to Jesus. And that passion would continue. If you look in John 12, you can flip just a few pages to John 12. And verse 20, this is an event that takes place during the midst of Jesus' ministry. It says, and there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came therefore to Philip, which is of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. Philip cometh and telleth Andrew, and Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. Now, when we get to Philip, we'll talk about what we can deduce about him. It's kind of interesting. Philip seems to be a man of the numbers. He's a man who deals in facts. He's perhaps a bit easy for Andrew. He might have been, just from what we read in the Gospels, it seems that perhaps Philip was the kind who got easily flustered. Maybe when you have all of these people who keep packing in trying to see Jesus, and you'll see what I'm talking about, especially when we get to deal with Philip. But this group of Greeks, so we're talking about proselytes, these Gentiles, come to Philip, and they say to Philip, they say, hey, we want to see Jesus. And Philip looks around, and maybe it's very crowded, and Jesus is over there. And so who does he look for to help him get these Greeks to Jesus? Andrew. He looks for Andrew. He says, Andrew, these guys want to see Jesus. Andrew says, I got it, man. Let's go. And they go through the crowd, and Andrew gets these men to Jesus. Andrew had been commissioned as a fisher of men. When Jesus said, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. I've made this statement before, but it bears repeating. The people who you know who catch the most fish are the people who go fishing the most often. The reason why Andrew brought people to Jesus the most regularly is because Andrew was always looking for people to bring to Jesus. He took seriously the command to be a fisher of men. When Andrew saw somebody, hey, have you met Jesus? Do you know about the Messiah? I met the Messiah. Let me tell you about the Messiah. And Andrew starts taking people to Jesus. That's what his life is marked by. Another thing, and it kind of dovetails with this, Andrew had an appreciation for the little things. If you look in John 6, and we'll pick up there in just a moment. John 6, Jesus is teaching, and the multitude is hungry. And Jesus asks his disciples where they could get enough food to feed these thousands. We're told there were 5,000 men. So when you add in women and children, we could very easily be looking at a crowd of 15,000 plus here. So the feeding of the 5,000 is actually probably a minimal estimate. That's how many men were fed, but the crowd would have been made up of men, women, and children. Jesus says, where are we going to get the food? And Philip starts ciphering. Look at verse 7. Philip starts ciphering, and he estimates... I can see him kind of in his head, or maybe he's got a piece of scrap papyrus in his pocket and he pulls out some piece of charcoal and he's working out the numbers, he's looking at the people, and he comes up with this, his estimate. He says, Lord, it would take about 200 penny worth of to give everybody just a snack. Again, there's an accountant for you. 200 penny worth is 200 days' wages. So that's a lot of money. And think about the apostles real quick. How much money do you figure they had between them? How many years' wages do you figure they had between them? Not much. They had given up an awful lot to follow Jesus. But the disciples are looking in their pockets. They're saying, well, I don't have 200 penny worth. I don't know anybody. Nobody has 200 penny worth hanging around in this crowd. And while they're looking in their pockets, look at verse 8. One of his disciples, Andrew, again, and he's listed as Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, there's a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. What are they among so many? Now, obviously, Andrew knew that 5 loaves and 2 fish would not be sufficient under normal circumstances. If you had to feed, let's say it's not 2,000 people. Let's say it's 200 people. And somebody comes up to you and they say, oh, I've got a loaf of bread and a pack of lunch meat. You would look at them and you'd feel insulted, wouldn't you? You'd say, no, that's ridiculous. Get out of here. That's not even close. That's just going to make people angry. We could give Andrew a hard time for his question that he asked there at the end of verse 9. He says, but what are these among so many? But truth be told, if I'd have been there and I'd have brought that little boy to Jesus, you know what I would have asked? Lord, I don't know if this is going to be any help, but this little kid has a snack, and it would feed you. Certainly not going to, I don't see how it's going to help this situation. What made this unique was that Andrew didn't write off the little boy's lunch. I would have. I'd have said, the little boy comes up and he shows me inside his little brown paper sack. He says, here's what I've got. I'd have said, oh, well, don't worry about it, son. Go ahead. Go away. Andrew didn't. Andrew said, hey, you know what? That doesn't look like it's going to help, but let's go to Jesus and let's see what he can do with it. And Andrew, again, brings this little boy to Jesus. Look at verse 10. And Jesus said, make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were sat down. Likewise of the fishes, as much as they would. When they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. This miracle happened because Andrew was willing to say within himself, the boy's lunch doesn't look like enough to me, but I'm not the Messiah. But he is, so I'm going to take this boy and we're going to see what Jesus can do with little things. We could look at other instances in the life of Andrew, but let me close with this. Andrew lived a life of travel and sacrifice. Obviously, with Jesus, he was willing to travel down to be with John. Then he was willing to leave his fishing business and be one of Jesus' disciples. But honestly, when you think of Andrew's life, and you think of the question that he just asked, every one of us could look in the mirror in the morning and we could ask, what can God do with so little? Looking at ourselves. But Andrew was willing to follow the Lord faithfully, listening to Christ's teachings and bringing people in contact with him. The last mention that we have of Andrew is in Acts 1. That's the last mention that we have of him by name. And there is mention of the apostles after that, so we would assume he's in that group. But the last mention of his name is in Acts chapter 1, which was just before the church was birthed, and then the church would explode out as persecution came. But church history tells us quite a bit more about this man, Simon Peter's brother, that he would travel far and wide in the service of the Messiah whom he'd gotten to know on earth. Some teach that Andrew went as far north into Scythia, which would be modern-day Russia. Right now, if you were to look it up, you would find that Andrew is the patron saint of Russia. And the reason why is because many believe that he gave much of his ministry there. Others teach, and there's no reason that both of these cannot be true. Others teach that Andrew made his way as far as the British Isles and made his way into Scotland. If you've ever seen the Scottish flag, it's a blue field, a blue flag with a white X on it. That's called St. Andrew's Cross. The reason why is because Andrew was supposed to have gotten as far as this. Now, that's really saying something in that day, because in the days when Andrew was alive, my ancestors were running around the hills of Scotland, and they were something less than friendly. They were the barbarians of the world at that time. They were less civilized than any other tribe. The Scots, the Picts, the Celts, they were rough people. Our people, who we come from, they were really, really rough when Andrew would have made his way up there. Wherever he did end up making it, it's fairly certain that at the end of his life, Andrew made his way back to the land that was under Roman control, and he ended his life in Achaia, which is near Athens in Greece. It's said that he was crucified by a Roman governor who was furious that Andrew had led his wife to Christ. How appropriate that Andrew would lose his life for bringing somebody to Jesus. That's what he'd done his whole life. That's how he'd started his ministry. That's how he would end his life and go into the presence of the Lord. As I said, Andrew is among the 4 disciples about which we know the most. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. Those are the ones who we know the most. But of those four, Andrew is the one about whom we know the least, of those four who we know the most. His was a life of faithful service. But a life of faithful service may not be recognized immediately, and it may not draw the applause of men on earth. But Andrew's glory in heaven is certain. You probably met more people in your life, Andy notwithstanding, who were named Peter than Andrew. Why? Well, because Peter was the most famous. If you were to go overseas, there's lots of Peters all over the place. Why? Well, because Peter was well known. But there would be no Peter had it not been for Brother Andrew. Andrew lived his life with a passion for truth and then a passion for bringing others in contact with the truth. In thinking of Andrew's life, 2 Corinthians 4:7 comes to mind. It says, "But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God, not of us." When you look at Andrew, you think, oh, that's a fisherman who, yeah, he was used of God, but eternity only knows the impact that this man's life made. Why? Well, because he was just passionate about bringing people to Jesus. May that be said of us as well.